Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S., a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brock and attorney at law Alan Phillips. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go!
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. If you desire to speak to the host, please press 1 at any time, and the host will be notified that there is a caller in queue. Otherwise, please hold and you will be able to listen to the show.
Well, it has today's date. I know it's been up here for at least a few days, so I'm not sure when it was first posted. But this is an article about an issue. We've talked about this issue before. And I don't know if this is a different instance or maybe another report on the same instance, but it's an issue that bears repeating to the extent that we may be doing some repeating here. The headline of this article is Newborn Baby Seized by Hospital and Police Because Mother Questioned Vaccine. And I'm going to read from the article here to tell you the story. This article was written by Michael Ferris, who is an attorney. And he's a founder, I believe, for the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. He's the Homeschool Legal Defense Association chairman. And I thought it was fascinating and wonderful because, well, first of all, of course, because it's a vaccine issue here, but the Homeschool Legal Defense Association typically takes homeschooling-related cases. They help defend people's right to homeschool. Many times homeschoolers are harassed one way or another for being homeschoolers. So this is a wonderful person and organization just because of the issue they've taken on defending parental rights. But they decided to take this case, even though it's not a homeschool case, because it's such a fundamental parental rights issue. And in the vaccine arena, we hear versions and variations of this story over and over from time to time, unfortunately. And there's some different parts and pieces to this. So I want to read some of the article here to give you the story and the background here, and I'm going to supplement that with some of my understanding about just what some of the rights are that are violated here, and maybe discuss a little bit about how these situations can really come up in the first place. Is there something legitimate about the way these disputes arise, or are they just instances of people being idiots, overstepping their boundaries, being overly aggressive, assuming authority that they really don't have, or is there some legitimacy to these kind of disputes? But anyway, love the way that Mr. the very essence of parental rights. And I just really love that that opening line there, because it's a comment that addresses issues that are going on in our society generally, as well as within the vaccine issue specifically. And anyway, he says he hopes that the reader shares his determination. And the parent's name, perhaps coincidentally, their last name is also Ferris, although it's a different spelling and there's no relation to him in this particular instance. But anyway, the mother goes into labor a bit earlier than expected, and the baby was coming rapidly, so given their location and other factors, the midwife they had hoped would deliver the baby at home encourages them to get in an ambulance and head to the hospital. So the parents do that. So the baby ends up being born in the ambulance in the parking lot of the medical center. This is, I believe, in Pennsylvania. And the hospital personnel arrive quickly, and they take charge of mom and the baby. Everything starts off well. But the baby is not left with the mother, and as any mother would do, she begins asking the nurses in attendance how the baby's doing, and the hospital staff are described as having been utterly unresponsive. And then at one point, they start to give the mother an injection, and she asks what it was and what's it for. And they gave just really vague answers. Oh, it's just to help you. You ever been patronized like that by a medical professional? Oh, don't worry about what we're doing, sweetie. It's okay. We'll just, we're just, taking care of you or whatever. I just find that so highly offensive. No, you don't just come up to me and inject me with something. You ask me if I would like it, if you want to offer it, and you explain what it is and what it's for. But you don't just sort of take over and start injecting things into somebody's body. This is just really offensive right there. After they give her the injection, they tell her it's an injection of oxytocin, and then they ask, you aren't allergic to that, are you? Yeah, fine time to ask. So the hospital personnel in this story are real quickly and early on in the story off the mark. So the mother, of course, persists in asking about the baby. You don't see your baby right away in the hospital. You know, you're wondering, is my baby deformed or is there some serious problem? And what they tell her is she's in good hands, you'll be able to see her soon. Well, okay, but what's going on? Where's my baby? I mean, I would be freaking out if I were in that situation, and I imagine this mother was too. Eventually, a doctor tells her that the baby scored 9 on the Apgar test. That's a physical exam they give for newborns, and a score of 8 or higher is considered healthy. So the newborn baby scores a 9. So, well, this is good. This is good feedback. The baby's fine. Where is the baby? And the article says it's unclear when the score was given, since she was born in the ambulance at birth. But shortly after this, a different doctor comes in and says the baby's very sick and would need to stay in the hospital. And the comments are accompanied by an explanation of his disdain for midwives. Says too many people think they know what they're doing. Oh, right, like doctors know what they're doing. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. That's, you know, that's an inconsistency that we live with people in any profession, or out of any profession for that matter, human beings generally. But what is fairly consistent about doctors is much more consistent is the arrogance they have about who they are and what they know, but what they think they know. Anyway, it's an hour, another hour goes by, and another hospital staffer finally brings the baby and says the baby is doing good. She'll be able to go home in no time. So this poor mother is being jerked around all over the place, being told completely different things by different people. So we already see right off the bat that we have an inadequate staffing system here, an undisorganized group of people who really just don't know what they're doing and aren't in communication with each other. Clearly, this was just an out-of-control situation, and I tell you, they would have been better to stay in the ambulance or just go ahead and have the baby at home than they were to go to the hospital, and, given that the baby was normal and healthy. But anyway, the next thing that comes on is that several hours later, another staffer tells dad and mom that the baby's going to have to stay in the hospital for 48 to 72 hours for observation. And even though the parents persistently ask, why does this baby need to stay, the only answer they get is, the law requires us to keep the baby for 48 hours. Now, they asked for a reference to this supposed law, and all they were told is, well, you'll have to get that from risk management. You know, let's pass the buck. Go get that from somebody else. And the attorney who writes this article, attorney Michael Ferris, makes a parenthetical note here. By the way, there is no such law in Pennsylvania. So the parents are being lied to directly and deliberately. Now, eventually a risk management staffer tells them they saw nothing wrong with the baby. They just like to keep babies like this for 48 to 72 hours. And they're told that the baby would not be released since it was unsafe for her to leave the hospital. What in the world are they talking about? And what in the world is going on here in this situation? So eventually, a risk management person tells them they'd be satisfied with a 24-hour stay and that mom and dad could remain with the baby overnight. Well, late in the afternoon, a government social worker. And they name the social worker. You know, I'm going to name the social worker too because I think it's important for people who impose severe harm on others for no reason need to be exposed. So a social worker named Angelica Lopez, and I don't know how to pronounce it's a hyphenated last name, Lopez-H-E-A-G-Y, Hegi, I don't know. So Angelica comes into Jody's room and announces that they were there to conduct an investigation. Now, when a social worker tells you they're conducting an investigation, that usually means that somebody reported you for doing something pretty seriously wrong. You've been neglecting or abusing your child in one way or another. Now, this mother has barely even seen her baby at this point. And so, of course, the mom asked, well, what are the allegations? And the social worker claims it would be against the law for her to show mom the allegations. Well, that's probably true. I don't think a social worker can reveal or has to reveal the name of the person who complained and the nature of the allegations in terms of what's written in the paper. I don't know that it's against the law, though, for the social worker to say what they're investigating. You know, and those laws may vary from state to state. But imagine, you know, you've showed up, you've just given birth to a baby, you've had the baby kept away from you, you've been obviously lied to and told conflicting stories by the same and different people over a period of time, you've done absolutely nothing wrong, and now somebody's conducting an investigation and they won't tell you anything about what it's about. So this is a story where insult keeps getting added to injury all the way through here. And yet the story continues to progress. And mom says, well, she'd not be comfortable answering questions if she couldn't know the allegations. And so the social worker immediately responds back, well, since you're not going to cooperate, I'll just go and call the police and we can take custody of the baby. Well, that's a pretty heavy-duty threat to lay on someone. Social workers have that authority, but if they exercise discretion in a blatantly inappropriate way, they do so at their peril beyond a certain point. So this is a social worker that's pretty much out to lunch, if you want my personal opinion here. But mom, fearing that the social worker would actually carry out the threat, so mom says, okay, she's willing to cooperate. So the social worker says, intimated, as the article says, that the issue was Jody's refusal to consent to medical treatment for the baby, and Jody replied that she had no idea why anyone would say that, because, and the social worker said, well, that she'd refuse to allow a vitamin K shot. And mom says, well, no one asked her about such a shot. In fact, she had overheard the hospital staffer saying that they'd already given Annie the vitamin K shot. But neither the social worker nor any hospital staffer ever gave mom or dad any example of any medically necessary treatment that they had refused for the baby. So at this point, dad leaves the hospital to tend to the older children who were staying with friends. And so mom, unfortunately, is left alone here. So shortly after this, the hospital asks to check the baby's white blood cell count, perform a strep test, and mom says fine. And then the hospital demanded that they give the baby a hepatitis B shot, and mom said she would only agree if they tested her and the baby to see if either of them were positive. See, because medically that makes perfect sense. Now, here's where mom acts reasonably and ultimately within her constitutional rights as a parent, but somewhat naively, given how hospital personnel tend to be very aggressive about vaccines in particular, although in this case they're being inconsistent, contradicting themselves, telling mixed stories and so forth. So it's a really horrific story from the start, but it just gets worse here. Anyway, the hospital claimed that they had forgotten about this earlier when it was still possible to test that same day, but they needed to give the shot anyway now without any testing. And when the social worker pressured mom to make an immediate decision, mom says, can you please wait until my husband gets back? So put yourself in Jody's shoes, says the author. You gave birth that morning in an ambulance. The hospital has made wild and conflicting claims about your baby's health all day long. You're exhausted. You're in pain. Your husband has gone to check on the kids. And a social worker has threatened to take your baby into police custody, is standing in your hospital room demanding that you make an immediate decision. And mom says, please, can't this wait until my husband gets back? Social worker is not going to allow anybody to pretend that she, the social worker, isn't God. So the social worker renews her threat. Jody doesn't answer the question. We're getting the police and we're taking the baby. Then the social worker started adding more conditions. Mom and dad will have to agree to sign a safety plan before she could conclude her investigation. Now, mom says she wants her attorney and a husband to look at the plan. She's in no position to read such a document and really understand what she's being pressured to sign. And it's interesting. The writer in this article, attorney Michael Ferris, he says, and then the story turns ugly. And I'm thinking, what do you mean turns ugly? It's been really ugly already. You mean it gets worse? So the social worker leaves the room and calls the police. And without a court order, they took the baby, immediately claiming she was suffering from illness or injury, which is just a completely false statement. It was a lie. The social worker consented to the administration of the hepatitis B shot, even though no blood tests have been done. Now, it's possible that there's a law that requires the hep B shot. There is in a lot of states. I don't know about this one in particular. And maybe there isn't even a philosophical exemption available. In Pennsylvania, the school vaccines have only religious and medical exemptions. But you have a constitutional right, if you're a parent, to the care, custody, and control of your children. And that would include making medical decisions, unless what you are doing is something that falls within a proper state definition of abuse or neglect. Nobody can require you to get a hepatitis B vaccine. Well, hepatitis B vaccine is to prevent illness from people who are sexually promiscuous and intravenous drug users. And I can count on one hand the number of infants I know or have ever even heard of. In fact, I can count on no hands the number of infants that I've ever heard of who are intravenous drug users or sexually promiscuous. There is no immediate threat to a baby for not getting a hepatitis B vaccine unless mom or the baby test positive for hepatitis B, although at that point I'm not sure what good a vaccine would do, which is something that generally takes days or even weeks to mount the desired antibody immune response. If you're already exposed, it may be too late to give a vaccine to prevent you from getting sick. But even if a vaccine would work, there's no evidence that there's any need for it. And it's just not something that infants are at risk of contracting unless they get it from mom while they're being born. So there's just, and that happens in a very, very tiny percentage of birth. So the problem here is I believe mom has a constitutional right just for being a parent to say no to the hepatitis B vaccine. Therefore, I think the social worker has overstepped her boundaries and has imposed some really serious distress, not just on the parents, but on this newborn child who's been kept away from mom. You only have one chance to bond fully and securely with your newborn baby, and that's after the baby's born. Now, maybe it's possible to develop a bond later, but it's not going to be the same if you can even get one. It's a one-time shot here to get this done in the best way possible, and the social worker and other staffers here interfering with us. It's just really, this is horrific. So, to make matters even worse, the police made mom get up out of her hospital bed and escort her to the entrance. They were expelling her from the hospital because she had not signed the safety plan. Dad meets mom at the hospital entrance. The police escort both of them off the grounds of the hospital. Mom is told she'd be allowed to return every 3 hours to nurse the baby through the night. The parents are forced to spend the night sleeping in a car in a parking lot at a nearby Walmart. They kicked mom out of the hospital, and in order to be close enough to feed her child, she had to come back in the car. She had to sleep in a car nearby, and she wasn't even given access to the baby as promised. It was not every 3 hours. Well, there was a good conclusion, if it's even possible at that point, given what harm has already happened. The next morning, a judicial officer held a shelter care hearing, and after hearing the evidence, the officer immediately returned to custody of the baby to the parents. No parents should ever be put through that kind of an ordeal. It's not a crime to ask questions about the well-being of your child. It's not a crime to ask for testing to ensure that a procedure is needed before it's done. It's not a crime to be protective of your child. But it is, as the author of this article says, a moral offense of the highest order to kick mom out of a hospital and to seize a child on the day of her birth simply because mom wanted to have her husband read a legal document before she signed, and there's no emergency whatsoever there, you know, that required something being signed sooner. So this is horrible. But I want to say a few finishing comments here. These kind of situations are avoidable. And when people ask me about the hepatitis B shot in the hospital at birth, you know, even if you're planning on doing a home birth, you have a backup plan in case you end up in a hospital, because some of those home birth plans go sour, like with this mother, and you end up in a hospital. So you need to have, ideally, a religious objection statement. And if you know you're going to give birth in the hospital, you get everybody on board ahead of time. Hey, we're not doing the hepatitis B shots against our religious beliefs. Or if you want to take, I think, the more difficult but still potentially legally liable course, you say, look, I understand this vaccine is recommended. Or if it's required, you say, I understand it's required. But we're going to exercise our constitutional right as parents to refuse the vaccine when our child is born. And you get everybody on board ahead of time if you know ahead of time you're going to be in the hospital. But if you don't know you're going to be in the hospital, if you're planning on not being in the hospital, you be prepared for that hospital visit anyway, because sometimes it's going to happen whether you plan it or not. So I just wanted to share the story again and make a couple of comments. You really need to be prepared, if at all possible, ahead of time for these situations. But just as importantly, if you're not planning on a hospital birth, you plan for that plan B in case you end up in the hospital, and you have something in writing. And if you want to get an attorney to write a letter for you that you can have on hand, that might not be a bad idea either, so that the people who read this know it's not just you and your opinion about your rights, but it's coming from someone with some authority who can argue that, yes, as an expert, you do have these rights. And nobody better mess with you. So I don't think you can avoid all of these absolutely, but we can probably avoid most of them with some advanced preparation, get some advanced information about what your rights are. Usually if it's an important matter and it's a legal matter, it's usually best to talk with an attorney to get some insight into your rights. And get some information about what maybe is the best way to approach whatever the situation you're dealing with is. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. I'm Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips. We have someone who's been very patiently waiting on the phone lines, and I thank you very much for waiting. I wanted to share this first article. I'm going to go ahead and go to break here a couple minutes early, and as soon as we come back, we'll bring in caller that's been on the phone waiting and happy to address whatever your question or concern may be. So please stay with us. We'll be back with a caller and with my co-host Debbie Buck of Homeopathy World Community to talk with a caller and talk to you about some of the current and recent vaccine news around the U.S. and around the world. This is Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. and we got another hour and a half to go, folks, so stay with us.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
Did you know most Americans know nothing or very little about the legal system? I am the Rose, Rose Colombo, longtime legal activist, legal coach, legal advocate, and the author of Fight Back Legal Abuse, Irwin Award winner, and also my latest political satire, Obamacare Dinosaurs, Rednecks, and Radicals. A political satire exposing the evil agendas of Obamacare and redistribution of wealth that leaves you with a thought-provoking ending. Will mankind survive, or will the U.S. natural-born citizen become extinct? It's available at Amazon.com. You can also visit my website, at www.fightbacklegalabuse.com for more information. So order your copy today and empower yourself with knowledge before injustices come knocking on your back door unexpectedly.
Get ready for the epic new documentary adventure ride of your life. Shade, the motion picture. A view into the globalist domain. Annabella's and Burma's film.
Nothing in this world works the way you think it does. Nothing. Governments do not operate the way you think they do. Banks do not do what you think they do. The police department is not here for what you think it is. Nothing in your world works the way you think it does.
We have never let them know that their world government has been identified, and they thought they just clawed the world economy, bring in a worldwide police state, but instead, it's going to bring them down.
You have to stand up. Speak up. Speak out.
See the motion picture. Order your copy of the DVD today at SheTheMotionPicture.com.
We are back. This is Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. Very glad to have you with us today on this wonderful Thursday. Gosh, what is it? September 19th, I think, already. We have a caller on the line, and first my co-host, Debbie Brook. Debbie, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fabulous. I'm doing great, and I hope everyone out there is also putting a little positive bent into their life today, because the news is, and I put this on my Facebook page, the news is quite depressing, frustrating, promoting emotions of anger and fear, and it's not really good to be constantly tied into reading all of these media news articles. In fact, what I'm doing is, on my Facebook, I've been doing I don't know what you call it, if it's a goal, but I'd like to finish 365 days where each day I am writing a thought that is permeating my day and driving it forward and hoping that I will be a better person at the end of the year. So what I wrote for today, which is day 41, watching television, listening to the radio, reading online may cause depression, frustration, and anger when the media provide only bad news. I can't stay in a world without love. And then I have, for your enjoyment, the song by Peter and Gordon. So change the dial and go outside for a walk in the sun after this show. Okay.
Well, thanks, Debbie. And, you know, you raise a really good point. We need to balance the awareness and sometimes focus that some of us have on the problems of the world with some positive thoughts, because there are also some wonderful things about the world as well. But we've got a caller with us that's been waiting very patiently from area code 618. Are you with us?
They may have turned it on and left it running in the background since he's been waiting about 2 hours. I don't know. Whoever this person is, if you give us a signal that you're there.
I'm here, but I'm just listening.
Wow. Okay, and give us your name and your question to Alan.
I'm just listening because I'm interested. I enjoy the show, but I really don't have any questions for it. I just was left on from the last show listening to it.
Okay. So we had the indicator there that you were wanting to talk, and that was from the last show then. Well, thanks for listening, and please stick around with us then. We've got lots more to talk about here.
Okay. Like your show. Thank you.
Thank you,
sir, for listening. Good to have you with us today. Well, Debbie,
okay.
Let's jump into some other news here. Do you have anything you want to kick off with, or shall I dive in?
I'll just give another plug for chocolate and dried fruits. I if anybody's not feeling tip-top, just a little piece of really high-quality dark chocolate or something like that, and some dried fruits and maybe even nuts, and you've got your own chunky. And I tell you, that can just put a smile on your face and probably create some good endorphins. Okay.
Right, enough of that happy stuff. We've got some, you know, horrible news to get into here to really...
Okay, you start us off with something that is going to depress us, and I'll take another bite of chocolate.
All right. Well, I hope you're balancing this for the two of us, because I'm going to get real depressed here if I just pay too close attention here. But, you know, Debbie, I have talked about... in shows in the not recent past, I've referred to in the past some figures I had back from 2010 when there was something on the order of, it was reported there was something on the order of around 300 vaccines in development. And just the idea that there would be, well, let's just say that many vaccines. I want to say any vaccines, but that many vaccines is really disturbing. And earlier this year, I saw a figure that said there were 250 vaccines that were either already waiting for approval by the FDA or that were in clinical trials, you know, the last stages before going to the FDA to seek approval, licensure by the FDA, for any vaccine to be administered in the U.S., lawfully anyway, it has to first be licensed by the FDA. So the FDA is a necessary step, but the last step before going out to the public with your vaccines. Well, there's an article on Yahoo News from just a few days ago. Actually, the article is dated September 11th. For some reason, I find that disturbingly appropriate. And this article says that there are, at latest count, 271 vaccines that are either already waiting for licensure from the FDA or in those last stages of clinical human trials. And of course, this is framed in a mainstream vaccine way. Look at how wonderful this is. My gosh, there's, you know, somewhere close to 300 vaccines that are, you know, ready to come out and save us all. And I'm sure that that number is every bit as horrific to those of us who hold an alternative view on vaccines as it is exciting to those who are unaware of the very serious problems and concerns with vaccines. But 271. Now, vaccines traditionally, as you know, Debbie, are to prevent infectious disease. And depending on whether you're counting shots or boosters or antigens or names of diseases and so forth, you can give different numbers, but there are many, many different vaccines that are already routinely given. But nothing, you know, near, you know, 100 or even 50, and here we have 270 new vaccines all trying to get it on the market here. And the quick overview, I've said this before, but I really think it bears repeating. The quick overview is that the federal government spends billions of dollars a year subsidizing vaccine research and development. So they pay for a huge part of the research and development because, let's face it, pharmaceutical companies, you know, they don't have any money. They're not rich. They can't just go out and do any research they want to anytime they want to, he said facetiously. And so they need help from the government to be able to do that. And the government also then mandates vaccines, state and federal governments. States mandate them for school enrollment. Increasingly, states are starting to mandate vaccines for healthcare workers, vaccines for there are bills pending, at least, that if passed would mandate vaccines for childcare workers and teachers. we'll see. If not stopped, we'll see this push go more and more, and we'll just see more and more new categories of people, primarily adults, being required to get vaccines, more and more vaccines for the kids who are already required to get vaccines. There's just no light at the end of this tunnel, especially with 271 vaccines just, you know, waiting to be the next one on your list. And then the federal government and state governments purchase vaccines. And then when there is a vaccine injury or death, as occurs frequently with vaccines, anytime you distribute a vaccine broadly to millions of people, you're going to have some number of permanent disabilities, injuries, and deaths from the vaccines. The federal government pays out about $100 million a year to vaccine victims, and the FDA and CDC tell us only 1 to 10% of the adverse events ever even get reported. So we have no clue what the real scope of the problem is. But this is the state of affairs, and the federal and state governments in some cases, I know here in North Carolina, there's a state program to compensate people who are injured or their families if someone's killed from a vaccine. So the state and federal governments, the federal government at least, subsidizes the research and development. The state and federal governments mandate vaccines. The state and federal governments pay for the death and injury when it occurs from vaccines. If you're unfortunate enough to be injured or to have a loved one killed by vaccines and then are fortunate enough to get through one of those systems. And at the federal level, only about a quarter of the people who apply for compensation for vaccine injury or death actually end up getting any money. So whether you think that means three-quarters of them didn't really have vaccine injuries or three-quarters of them the government wiggled out of it, you know, I'll let you decide that for yourself. I personally do not think that three-quarters of those who apply for compensation were just people who didn't have a vaccine injury and were trying to get some money out of the government. I think that's it's very unlikely that that kind of percentage would fall into that category. I think far more likely the system is broken and is not truly compensating those who should be compensated. But to bring this all back around here, 271 vaccines, but there's no wonder that every pharmaceutical company on the planet, and I wouldn't be surprised if there were some extraterrestrial pharmaceutical companies trying to get in on this market, because it's a, you know, there's no, you know, they'll pay you to make it, they'll buy it from you, they'll mandate it in the laws for people to get it, and then if anything goes wrong, the government will take care of it. You don't have to worry about it. Who wouldn't want to be in on that if you could throw morality and ethics out the window? And throwing morality and ethics out the window is something that the pharmaceutical industry has a lot of experience doing. This is an industry that routinely engages in criminal behavior. There are routinely criminal fines in the hundreds of millions of dollars and even as high as $8 billion in two instances from the pharmaceutical industry for having engaged in criminal behavior, criminal fines here. Now, there are civil fines as well, but the criminal fines have been as high as $1 billion. This is an industry that routinely engages in criminal behavior. Nobody goes to jail. They pay the fine. They're not happy to pay, you know, $1 billion fine, but if you engage in criminal behavior and you get $5 billion and you have to pay $1 billion to the government, well, okay, but you still came out ahead. The point here is that this is an industry that routinely engages in criminal behavior that they consider moral, ethical, and criminal legal boundaries as nothing more than a financial calculation. You and I probably wouldn't do that. And if we did and we got caught, we'd wind up in jail. But when the pharmaceutical industry violates criminal law, nobody goes to jail, they pay a fine. When they get caught, who knows how many times they do it and don't get caught, but when they get caught, they pay a fine, you know, they count their net profit, and they keep on going. They would not keep engaging in this kind of behavior if it was not profitable to do so. So,
Alan?
Yes.
I really appreciate you're always at the forefront of this information, keeping the facts in mind. And again, we see a similar thing when we talk. I'm going to change the subject just a tad, but it's under the same umbrella of large industries having the funds and making it a part of their business to promote what they do. And so Monsanto, the headline is, Monsanto pays millions to stop labeling in Washington State. If you recall, we were trying to get labeling of GMO foods in California. That went down because of the money funding by big business. Again, Monsanto, DuPont, and the GMA are trying to deceive Washington voters. And if you can, if anybody out there wants to have genetic modified foods labeled, and it's got to start someplace. And if you can help the folks who are in the state of Washington, then call, write, blog, get together with the other people. Monsanto has donated $4.6 million to try to stop this simple constitutional right to know what is in your food. And the same thing, how many people know exactly what is in the vaccines? I was watching the Gary Knoll video documentary of a statement that he made very recently, and he says that the majority of vaccines have got DNA, RNA particles in there that can be changing our DNA and the DNA of the generations to come. And it's already been happening for so many years. The question is, how many people really know? And that's because of disclosure of information is not full disclosure. And I could go on with this same topic also about the way that things are marketed to the general public, kind of overstepping their bounds. And Gary Knoll also, I don't know his exact quote, it's half truth is really a lie, which is actually the way it is. If you don't have the full facts, if you are not being told the negative impact, or some of the studies are cut out to kind of trim it up and make it look pretty and say what you want it to say, then it's a lie. It's not a half truth. It's not a white lie. It's outright not telling the public what they need to know in order to make an informed decision. Why don't you continue with that? Or I hope I didn't break you up in the middle of something you were going to say.
No, I was actually kind of going on a bit long-winded there, Debbie. I really appreciate that you came in and gave me and the listeners both kind of a breath there.
Sometimes it's nice to hear another voice, you know.
Absolutely. And I have, believe it or not, heard my voice before, so I don't mind hearing yours. It's a very pleasant one, so thank you for stepping in there.
I also want to acknowledge all of the folks who are out there listening today, both on freedomizerradio.com, on Blog Talk Radio, Homeopathy World Community, because we're simulcasting, and if you're on the chat, both on Freedomizer, that's probably the only place you can be on the chat today, and calling in if you have a question or a comment to 347-324-3704 or by clicking the little blue chat with the Skype button. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so thank you very much, Debbie, for bringing that in. And it's a really good point. And it's such a no-brainer, and that's why it's just, I just don't get it about the, you know, labeling what's in your food. I don't understand why anybody would ever have a dispute over that one way or the other, let alone spending billions of dollars to try to prevent it. It's such a straightforward, common sense idea, and I just don't understand how any amount of money could...
It's like we shouldn't even have to be voting on it. It should be an obvious right, and it should be an obvious obligation. You know, that's the problem. How did we get so messed up in America that things can be twisted so we don't even get the proper information? They're trying to hide something, basically. They don't want you to know something because they know that if you put GMO on the label, a lot of people are not going to purchase their product.
Right. Because it's such a no-brainer, of course, you know, you need to know what's in the food you buy and have the right to purchase it or not accordingly. Because it's such a no-brainer, it's not as simple as, oh, they just don't want people to know so they won't buy it. I mean, the question is, to me, the profoundly implied, at least, question, a step beyond that. Well, what what is it about GMOs they don't want us to know about, and they want us to have it in our bodies anyway? I mean, it really strongly suggests and probably gives rise to some of the so-called conspiracy theories, although when I say conspiracy theory, first of all, it's not at all intended to be the immediate dismissal that the mainstream media uses that phrase to do, but there's evidence supporting some of these so-called conspiracy theories anyway. I mean, there's research showing that GMOs are not healthy for you. So it's not, you know, there's a good reason why people would want to know what's in their food and like to have the choice to say no. You wonder how it would be even legal for the GMO to be in food in the first place, given that there is research showing harm. But if they could somehow have an exception to the common sense no-brainer that if it's harmful, it shouldn't be in there at all, if you're going to let it be in there anyway, then you should definitely have special warnings about it. Not even just have it on the label, but if it's GMO, it ought to be required to be printed in, you know, bright red, so that even if you don't read all the ingredients and you just glance, that you see, oh, this has something in it that's harmful. You know, if you're going to put arsenic in food, then let's go ahead and, you know, put the Surgeon General's warning on it like you do on cigarettes. You know, let's have...
Well, the reason they're not doing that is because they make a claim that GMO are perfectly fine and good and may even be healthy for you. You know, and they're protecting the planet and they're creating foods for those who... otherwise would not have food. So their stance is that this is a good thing, and they don't want to hear the other side of it. That's why, because it's controversial.
But it's only controversial because the science has been suppressed. And it just, you know, again, it's like, why would anybody go to this much trouble, this much expense to get something into food and keep it in food, if the science is so clearly against it? I mean, it really strongly smacks of some underlying agenda. And that's not the focus of this show, so I think I'll try to steer us back over to vaccines, but it just, you got to wonder why. And I say the same thing, for example, with flu vaccines. Hospitals are continuing all over the country to implement mandates that all of their employees be vaccinated with the flu vaccine, whether they have anything to do with patients or not. And they keep claiming this is for the safety of the staff and patients, and yet there's multiple mainstream sources. This is not even an alternative conspiracy theory kind of thing. Multiple mainstream sources that say there is no credible evidence in the medical literature that supports these policies, and yet the policy keeps going forward. So that raises the question. What is it that's in these flu shots that they want in everybody's body? Because they're recommended for everybody 6 months of age and older, and they're required on healthcare workers. And the reason they're requiring healthcare workers is because once they get healthcare workers vaccinated, they're going to go to the rest of the country and say, look, all your healthcare workers are vaccinated. You need to get this shot too. And it's clearly not rooted or based in any credible science. And so what's it about? It's not, I don't believe it's just about the money, although certainly there's a huge money component. You have to get a flu shot every year, so that's why they're picking the flu shot and not the pertussis or polio or some other shot. But it's,
okay,
you know.
So,
Did I stop you? End sentence.
Okay. I thought this was kind of like a good segue to say, because vaccines are controversial and the studies, let's look at a study. Vaccines increase superbugs. You know that we're having a major problem internationally with MRSA, MRSA, resistant strains of bacteria. So here's an article that says a vaccine that has dramatically curbed pneumonia and other serious illnesses in children is also having an unfortunate effect, promoting new superbugs that cause ear infections. So here's the question. How often is your child going to be walking around with pneumonia that it would require you to have this pneumonia vaccine? For how many people really need the pneumonia vaccine if there are possibly natural evolutionary ways? And I think I'm going to plug that from now on. You know, we have been evolving over the millennia with nature, and we should be working in harmony with nature to to build our immunity the way all of mankind has done instead of doing these injections. This is my own personal view. Okay. This is not legal. This is not medical advice, but take good care of yourself. And so here they're saying that doctors reported discovering the first such germ that is resistant to all drugs approved to treat childhood ear infections. 9 toddlers in Rochester, New York, have had the bug, and researchers say it may be turning up elsewhere. It's a strain of strep, which is the MRSA, not included in the pneumococcal vaccine, Wyeth's Prevnar, which came on the market in the year 2000, which means it's been around over a decade. And they say it is recommended for children under the age of 2. Now, if you're up on the people, the physicians and spokespersons for taking care of your health without vaccines, like Dr. Sherry Tenpenny and others, they'll say that a child who is under the age of 2 has an immature immune system, and probably these vaccines are going to be an insult and an assault to their system. So doctors say parents should continue to have their toddlers get the shots, that's on the report, because the vaccine prevents serious illness and saves lives. But the new resistant strep is a worry. Ooh, I mean, Alan, can you believe this? Even though they know that it's promoting the increase in strains that will have absolutely no effect from antibiotics or anything else, they're still telling you to get them for little children? I mean, I just wonder where these people are coming from. And this is a much, much longer article. It is reported on the dartmouth.edu press release, okay? That Dartmouth edu press release is about promoting drugs to people and without all of the information. So I'd have to look up that link, and I'm sure you can find it if you just put in your search engine about pneumonia drug Prevnar and ear infections. Okay, let me tell you if I can find that. That link is foxnews.com. It's Fox News. So this is about a pneumonia vaccine that's going to increase superbugs. You have more news?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just sort of speechless. What is there to say that sort of speaks for itself? You know, even taking the biased slant of the article in with respect to ways in which it was, as you read it, sounded a little bit of propaganda thrown in there along with the truth.
The propaganda was me?
No. The article, what you were saying from the article, sounded like it was a pro-vaccine article despite revealing a serious problem, you know, associated with a vaccine. But it's a dilemma, you know, to be sure. We are really close to break time again.
Okay.
So maybe we'll go ahead and go to break here so we can come back in a little bit. We come back, we're going to talk about an article, CVS Pharmacies. This is the title of the article from naturalnews.com. CVS Pharmacies caught lying about risks of high-dose flu vaccines pushed on senior citizens. Right. So we'll come back and talk about that right after break. You know, CVS is saying the vaccines are perfectly safe. Is that really true? We're going to come back with information to dispute that CVS claim here as expressed in this article. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Brook and vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips. We've got another half hour with you jointly, and then Debbie Brook will finish out the two-hour segment with the last half hour talking to you about homeopathy. Something you definitely don't want to miss because you can learn some very useful and practical information from Debbie on that. So stick around for all of the above, and then we'll be back with you in just a few minutes.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you'll ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Hello, everyone. Proof here again. I want to let you know about our brand new sponsor, Silver Leaf Tea. Now, as you guys know that have listened to me for years, I am a tea aficionado. I have hundreds of different flavors and styles at my house, and Silver Leaf has exactly the kind of stuff that I look for. I love loose tea, great antioxidants. I just love the taste of it, and this Silver Leaf has black, they have green, they have white, they have organic. Great for hot tea and iced tea. Silver Leaf Tea, it's right on our website, freedomizerradio.com. And check it out and order it. Silver Leaf Tea.
Want to spread awareness to your neighbors, family, and friends about what is going on in our country today? It may be things you already know, like the large number of FEMA camps spread around this country to lock up citizens like you and me. What legislators are doing to strip states and people of their sovereign rights. Or legislation giving states the power to force vaccinate under a declared state of emergency. Do your neighbors understand what is going on? William Lewis Films offers the perfect tools to inform our population about this government's tyrannical shift from a constitutional republic to a despotic democracy. Films like 911 Ripple Effect, Beyond Treason, One Nation Under Siege, Washington You're Fired, Camp FEMA, Enemy of the State, Don't Tread on Me, Blood of Patriots, The Ron Paul Uprising, even 911 in Plain Sight, William's first production, are all available at williamlewisfilms.com. Get your DVDs today at williamlewisfilms.com. Educate against the police state.
Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high-fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here, there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, so go to freedomizerradio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on freedomizerradio.com.
We are back, Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S., with Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Brock and vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips. And, Debbie, I talked right before break about a Natural News article. CVS pharmacies caught lying about risk of high-dose flu vaccines pushed onto senior citizens with aggressive bribery schemes. So CVS
You have no idea how many photographs I have taken and never followed through writing a blog of all of the banners and hearing over the speaker inside the store about getting your shot, your flu shot, and all the benefits you will get, and even radio commercials while I'm driving in the car. So it's out there. Go ahead.
Full force. And I'm going to take a few moments here to toot my horn. I really want folks who are listening, and anyone you know who's in the healthcare profession, and particularly hospital employees who are being required to get flu shots or lose their jobs. And I've seen hospitals coming on board slowly over the last 3 or 4 years on this, but mostly last year and this year in a really big way. And I've heard a few already who have said that it's not mandatory this year, but it will be next year. the vast majority of hospitals around the country, and I know this through firsthand experience, I've worked with healthcare workers. Just last fall and early winter, I worked with healthcare workers in about 150 of them in, at last count, 26 states around the country, and almost all the hospitals are implementing unlawful exemption policies. They are overly restrictive in order to maximize their immunization rates of the hospital workers. They are violating federal civil rights law. So I just want to spread as far and wide as I can around the U.S. now and in the immediate future to as many healthcare workers as possible that you do not necessarily have to get the flu shot at work, and you do not necessarily have to meet your employer's guidelines for an exemption, because if their guidelines are unlawful, like most of them in my experience so far are, you can get around that. All you have to do is comply with what the law says. So there's information about that at vaccinerights.com, and people are welcome to contact me if they want more information about how their rights work and what I can do to help people get the exemption in that context. But it's this is the season, Debbie. This is the point, and hospital workers are being given deadlines, and you don't even have to meet your employer's deadline to get an exemption either, because the law doesn't require you to do that. So what really frustrates me, Debbie, and I see this in the healthcare arena, but other arenas as well, that authorities overstep their legal boundaries, and most people don't know the law in any detail. And so most people will look at the boundary that the authority asserts and say, oh, well, you know, they look at their employer's requirement or their state law requirement in some instances and say, oh, well, I can't meet that requirement. I guess I have to get the shot. I can't afford to quit my job. And most people aren't going a step further to say, well, is that legal? Can they do that? Is there a way around that? Because it turns out that most of the time it's not legal. These are unlawful policies. I just recently wrote a letter to Duke University administrators on behalf of some Duke clients and explaining to them, like I have with other hospitals around the country, your policy is unlawful. Here's the law that says so. I get a letter back from Duke attorneys that says, thank you. You know, thank you for your information. Well, what do you mean thank you? Are you going to fix your policy or not? Are you going to keep violating the law or not? You know, tell us what's going on here. So, as I find myself saying to clients, hospital administrators come in two flavors, aggressive and very aggressive. Usually I find the hospital attorneys to be very friendly and cooperative, or at least communicative, but every once in a while, you know, they just take a hard line as well. And nobody seems to want to fix the problems here. We're above the law. You know, we're doctors here. We can do whatever we want. That mentality pervasive in the medical profession, sadly and disturbingly. But I'm happy to say, you know, most of my healthcare worker clients have been successful. That's not an indication of any future clients' chances of success, because every situation is different. But on the whole, if you get an attorney involved, you've got a much better chance of being successful. But without an attorney, I'm sorry to say in this arena, and I wouldn't say this if I didn't think it was true, if it wasn't my experience, but without an attorney, it's difficult. I've had at least three different healthcare worker clients from different parts of the country say something like, and I'll use one of them as an example, but it's not an isolated instance, where they say they were retold by a hospital administrator that the system, in this case meaning some small group of hospitals, the hospital system had gotten over 1,000 requests for exemptions, and the hospital administrator proudly boasts that we only allowed 4. And I don't believe for a second that only 4 out of over 1,000 actually qualified. What I do believe and what I see in my practice is that hospitals violate federal law, being overly restrictive, requiring things they're not allowed to require so that they can keep people from legally refusing the vaccine. So hard to tackle that one on your own, unfortunately. Anyway, here's an article, Debbie. CVS Pharmacy's caught lying. This is natural news, but they're referring to this great little video that is at a website called experimentalvaccines.org, experimentalvaccines.org. And the Natural News article is linked from the news page of my Pandemic Response Project website, and that's all three words spelled out, pandemicresponseproject.com, pandemicresponseproject.com. The news page links a whole long list of articles, and this is National News article is one of the ones linked in the first few articles at this point. The video does a very short but very concise but very clear little research project showing you the papers and the websites right there on the video. So CVS has these specials on their web and in their stores where they announce this 20% off shopping pass when you get a flu shot. So you get a flu shot there, they'll give you a 20% off shopping pass. Now, what does CVS say about the vaccines? They say the vaccines are fine. You know, the perfectly safe. Trying to see if I can find the exact language, but, you know, basically said there were, you know, little or no problems with the vaccines. You go to, I believe it was an FDA website, but if you look at that video, experimentalvaccines.org, they give you the information. And first of all, they're referring to what they call a high-dose vaccine for seniors, because, you know, there's been this problem that's been described in the medical literature that flu vaccines seem just not to work in seniors. I'm not sure if you scrutinize the research carefully that they work in anybody. And the Cochrane Collaboration has vouched for that in their different reviews of the flu vaccine literature, but particularly problematic with seniors, where even the mainstream people who ignore only all the medical literature that doesn't agree with their preconceived views, even those people will acknowledge that flu vaccines have been a problem in terms of their effectiveness in seniors. And so they use this high-dose thing where they have something like four times the antigens that they have in the regular vaccines. And the long story short here is that they were saying minimal adverse events within, I think they were saying the first 28 or 30 days of getting the flu vaccine, but within the 30 to 180-day period, there were 23 deaths in the vaccinated population with the regular vaccine, and then there was, let me see if I can find the actual numbers here. The concept here is that those who had gotten the high-dose vaccine, that group had twice the number of deaths as the group that had the regular flu vaccine. And, of course, you will always see people saying these studies, and perhaps with some degree of validity, oh, we don't know if the vaccine actually had anything to do with the deaths. We just note that after the vaccine, a certain number of deaths happen. Well, strictly speaking, I don't think you can draw a causal relationship between a correlation. You would probably have to do some further sort of scientific assessment, testing, medical testing or something to rule in or rule out the vaccine as the cause or not. But when you have something that shows a clear difference between the number of deaths between two different vaccines, that's highly suggestive of a causal relationship. What is concerning here is not the point about whether or not this is proof of cause or relationship, causal relationship, as it is that CVS is deciding to report based on incomplete information. 23 senior citizens died within 180 days of taking the vaccine. And the insert attempts to explain this away, that claiming that none of the deaths were considered related by the vaccine, but considered by whom? By the vaccine scientists who are paid to by the vaccine manufacturer? Of course, they're the ones who write these documents. So the vaccines contain formaldehyde, which is a potent neurotoxic chemical. There is virus-containing allotoic fluid. I don't know what that is, but it contains viruses. That's a potential problem. So, and the fact that two different vaccines have distinctly different death rates is, again, suggestive that there's a relationship there with the vaccine. But even if scientifically you can't say the vaccines are causally related, you can't say they're not either. And so to just interpret from that you can say the vaccines are safe, that's not an accurate statement. It's not a scientifically accurate statement. What it is a biased marketing-driven statement that you want people to use this product and not think that there's any risk associated with doing that. So it's a big concern in my book. Debbie, any thoughts on that?
I have bunches of thoughts, of course. One of the things that I kind of worry about is when Mike Adams begins one of his talks, a lot of people would call it rants, and says, killing senior citizens with high-dose flu vaccines. I mean, it's kind of harsh, and I worry whether he should be so blatant about it. Sometimes when he's talking on, I guess it gets a lot of hits on the internet, but, you know, I don't know. I would like to also read the actual article. It's an FDA download, the biological blood. Is that it? He have a link on there for that, the blood vaccines, highlights of prescribing by Sanofi Pasteur. So he's saying that it actually tells you in that report, in that download, about how many people died. I kind of, you know, I like to go back to the source and actually make sure that things are clear to me. That's the way I would like to do that. I do, and like I said, I have been taking so many pictures over the last couple of years of every single time that I go to a pharmacy, and I see all of these marketing tools to entice me to get a vaccine. And if I was a new young mom, if I was an elderly person who was not well read, if I wasn't a critical thinker, if I didn't question what the authorities and the government are saying to me, then I would probably go right along with it and say, oh my gosh, I better go in and get my flu vaccine or whatever other vaccine they were trying to sell to me that day. And the fact that they're going to give you money back or rewards back, this is truly bribery, and you can tell that there is some kind of a motivation. Although this is standard today about becoming part of a rewards club of every store that you go to. So they have just taken up the way that marketing and business is done today, and it's a very sad state of affairs.
Well, I agree. I think maybe would have phrased it slightly differently, but I think it's the same thing you're talking about, that sometimes some of the alternative health people and some of the bigger ones, some of the more successful or popular ones, are a bit sensationalistic. And there's a certain amount of preconceived conclusion that they come from. But, you know, when you see a certain amount of this stuff over and over again, it's just really hard to start out kind of neutral and calm and objective. So I really understand and appreciate the point of view. Whether it's an effective way to communicate, I guess, depends on the person reading it. But some of the points here I think are worth bearing out. You know, he says in this article, the vaccines have no proven benefits whatever. It's admitted right in the insert that specific levels of antibody titer post-vaccination with inactivated influenza virus vaccines have not been correlated with protection from influenza virus infection. Like, what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got this couched in some medical terms here, and most people aren't even looking at the insert anyway. And if you weren't a doctor or someone with a little persistence or willing to go look up terms, you might not even understand what you just read there. But basically what they're saying is that this hasn't been proven to do anything.
I'm reading one of the comments. Somebody in the comments section said they personally know a pharmacist who was told she would get a bonus if she successfully gave 20 flu vaccinations. I mean, this is crazy. This is
okay,
the police are going to come out on this day and they're going to get a bonus when they ticket so many people, which is something they do, but you know what day that's going to be. And it's bribery in all levels and all aspects of the system for the
and
people
you know,
who really... Yeah, go ahead.
If they're spending that much money to get the vaccines out there, again, it just raises the question, what is this really about? You know, what is it that's in
mm-hmm.
these vaccines that they want in all of our bodies? I mean, the package insert, according to this article, admits that the vaccine doesn't work, first of all, says that it may not protect all recipients, and then separate from that, it doesn't work on immunosuppressed individuals, and who tends to be immunosuppressed? Well, senior citizens. So the very people targeted with this high-dose vaccine are the ones most likely to receive no benefit from it, and also the most likely to be experiencing the health risks associated with it, because they're going to be most vulnerable to the potential, you know, adverse effects. So it's just crazy. You know,
right.
What
I mean,
I
could repeat myself and say they could spend all of these gazillions of dollars to improve life, to improve and strengthen the individual's immune system, rather than selling this kind of an injection, which has to be a reboosting every time, every year, because, of course, they're making a guess on what is the strain that's going to be happening that year. And they're also, when I think about it, targeting the weak, the young infants, the young children, and the elderly who need to strengthen their immune system. How about giving out turmeric extract? How about giving out, you know, come get your turmeric extract and your vitamin C, your vitamin D. We're going to have a full-spectrum sun lamp here. You can sit here for 5 minutes. It's what harm can that do in the wintertime, right? It's going to help your seasonal affective disorder, and you'll be better off. You'll walk out smiling, and you didn't even get hurt by an injection.
I think we should launch a counter movement and get all of the supplement retailers to offer a 5% discount on their order if their order includes flu-fighting vitamin D supplements or
Sounds good.
The turmeric you're saying extract, which I've only just been recently reading about, which I believe has some. Immune supporting effects. There's just so many things that people can do that don't risk injury or death, that don't cost an arm and a leg to get, and that actually work. And it would be really fun if we could have a counter campaign every time the pharmaceutical companies come out with their little promotion things. Could we counter that with promotions supporting people's purchase of the more effective alternative ways of dealing with the risks of influenza. Well,
equal
Debbie,
equal opportunity advertising.
That's
it
right.
Sounds like a
That's
great
right.
idea. It's sort of like the political campaigns when the candidates have to give equal time to the other side. I think that's an awesome idea, but I think that and they have to pay for it. That would be good. That would be really
well,
good.
Well, Debbie, I'm going to tuck in one other quick issue here before we go to our last break today and then get you back on to talk about homeopathy after the break. A real interesting article here from the Dartmouth Institute for Health Policy and Clinical Practice. And I think this probably has some at least indirect relationship to vaccines. It's not a vaccine article, but I thought it was interesting. It's TV drug ads, the whole truth, ? And in this article, it says consumers should be wary when watching those advertisements for some pharmaceuticals on the nightly TV news, as 6 out of 10 claims could potentially mislead the viewer, say researchers, in an article published in the Journal of General Internal Medicine. I'm delighted to see this issue addressed. The TV pharmaceutical ads have presented for me as a parent a wonderful educational opportunity to talk to my son about marketing and advertisement, and I just think this is pretty cool to see that there's now some research underscoring some of this. And it's real interesting. They make a distinction in the article. Boy, let me see if I can find it. First of all, pharmaceutical companies spent, I guess they have, maybe this is one of the last years they had information on, but $4.8 billion in 2009, surpassing consumer promotion for non-prescription products of $3 billion the same year, according to researchers. They indexed an archive of recordings of the nightly news broadcast, news and commercial segments on ABC, CBS, and NBC since 1968 and on CNN since 1992. And they viewed the advertisements in the 6:30 to 7 p.m. period because the nightly news is, you know, the time slot that drug advertisers want because of the older audience that watches the nightly news, you know, so that's their market for prescription drugs. They found that false claims, which are factually false or unsubstantiated, were rare. Only 1 in 10 claims were false. I'm not sure I call 1 in 10 rare. That seems a little more than rare to me.
That's not rare. Not rare at all.
Yeah.
One in 100,000 is a little bit more rare.
But they say false advertising is illegal and can lead to criminal and civil penalties. So it's interesting to me that even 1 in 10 would, you know, cross that line and see if they got caught or not. But they said most claims were potentially misleading. 6 in 10 claims left out important information, exaggerated information, provided opinions, or made meaningless associations with lifestyles. Now, I think this is really interesting, and I don't want to pick this apart too much here, but to me, something that where important information is left out or the information is exaggerated, to me, that's not potentially misleading. To me, that is deliberately misleading. You don't accidentally put a commercial together. You know, they very painstakingly decide every word, every image, every sound, all that is contrived, calculated, put together to maximize whatever the goal of any given ad is, in this case, to sell pharmaceutical drugs. And if important information is left out or the information is exaggerated, to me, that's not potentially misleading. To me, that's deliberately deceptive. So I take exception to the language they use here. But nonetheless, it's interesting that what they're saying, false or potentially misleading claims may be more frequent in over-the-counter drug ads than for prescription drugs. They say 8 out of 10 claims in the over-the-counter drugs were misleading or false, while only 6 out of 10 in the prescription drugs. Well, I'm glad to know that there's a 40% chance that the information on prescription drugs is actually accurate. Oh, this is so crazy. There ought to be harsh and prompt penalties for anything that is not clearly accurate and truthful. But what is accurate and truthful in this arena anyway, Debbie? Because the medical literature is probably considered a quote-unquote accurate and truthful source, and yet, as we've discussed in the past, there are people speaking right out of the mainstream medical publishing industry saying, hey, this industry is not reliable anymore because the money involved causes people to falsify study conclusions, or to distort or exaggerate, which to me would be falsifying study conclusions, or to conveniently not publish the studies that don't show the money-making results and publish only those studies that do support the sale of products. And so there's serious problems in the industry there. But anyway, I thought it was real interesting. I wanted to share just that we'd had a study looking at TV ads. Probably not a surprise to most of the listeners on these shows, but nonetheless, good to know that there's some research being done and being published.
Well, they know how effective television ads are over the last 30, 40 years in investigating marketing to children. And we all have tendencies to want to please, want to take things at their face value and go ahead and believe. We are marketed by the way that they create a background, a backdrop, a soothing voice, another kind of a distraction with beautiful scenery of a healthy person and on a bicycle at the beach in the mountains, you know, doing something that is soothing. So it's a mixed message, and they do it, and they know how to do mind control. And what they're saying is you're not getting the full story when you see a short marketed television commercial.
Yep. That sums it up very well, Debbie. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Brook and Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips. We're going to go to break. We'll be back with Debbie Brook to talk to you about homeopathy. Folks, this is Debbie is one well-informed cookie on this subject. I use that word cookie affectionately here.
Well-informed chocolate chip cookie.
Chocolate chip cookie, that's right. Let's be precise here, because chocolate was one of the words of the day here. Debbie knows her stuff on homeopathy. She's been studying it for years and practicing it as well, and she's just really a wealth of information on the topic. So I encourage you to stick around for the next and last half hour of our show today. There's a lot to learn listening to Debbie on this, but for a couple of moments here, we'll go to break. And the next break...
By the way, there's no host. Oh, a new host has come in suddenly. Okay, so I don't know who it is, but I don't know who's hosting, but we're thankful to you, whoever you are. Is it Cheryl?
All right.
Okay. Whatever's happening. Okay.
Well, in any event, we're going to go to break here for a little bit, and the next break is information about some of the other shows here at freedomizerradio.com. There is a long list of fascinating shows here, and we encourage you, of course, to come back every week and catch our show, but we're just one of a list of fascinating shows here at Freedomizer Radio. So if you like what we're telling you, you're going to love some of the other shows here as well. And here's some information about some of those shows, and then we'll be back with Debbie in just a little bit.
I'm an American, red, white, and blue, and I'm a citizen.
This just in on Freedomizer Radio, breaking news. Jay and the Duke have just taken over the entire bandwidth for 90 minutes every Friday night from 9 to 10:30 Eastern Time to spread the message of faith and freedom. The First Amendment of the Constitution prevents any force of tyranny from stopping them. Red alert,
red
alert. The revolution has just seized the radio, and we still believe. Radio Revolution.
How do you wake up in the morning? Do you jump out of bed with a smile? Or do you hit the snooze button over and over again? Tune in each Friday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time to Wake Up and Live. I'm your host, Christine Siegel. On my show, you will learn valuable health and wellness tips that will boost your energy levels. Are you eating a sad diet? Learn how to find quality, nutrient-dense foods. Life is what you make of it. Only you can change your life. You are that important. Join me, Christine Siegel, on Wake Up and Live here on Freedomizer Radio.
Join me, Valerie Ann, on the Truth Exposition Show at Freedomizer Radio in exposing the truth about FEMA camps, drone surveillance, martial law, the New World Order, our threatened freedoms and civil liberties, and for weekly news and current events. Mainstream media continues with its lies and deceit to fulfill the agenda of the New World Order. So please join me in exposing the truth, along with the lies and the deceptions that are being fed to the American people. The people of the United States have a voice, and your voice will be heard through Freedomizer Radio.
Hi, I'm Tiger Lily, show host for Tiger Lily's Freedom Roar on Freedomizer Radio. I like to have philosophical discussions about government, religion, politics, and most importantly, peaceful parenting. These are all topics that tend to be taboo at dinner tables, social gatherings, and even around water coolers. But we must talk about police brutality, government corruption, the forced indoctrination of our children, and mainstream media propaganda. I hope you'll join me on Tiger Lily's Freedom Roar, so that together we can begin to cover these issues with open minds and hearts. every Friday from 11 to noon Pacific Time on Freedomizer Radio.
Welcome, Freedomizers. This is Juan Hicks of Juan's Media Matrix. Be sure to tune into my show every Tuesday from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. From time to time, I'll be featuring special guest interviews along with the latest news headlines from around the world. You're always welcome to call into the show by dialing 347-324-3704 and pressing 1. Otherwise, you can listen to the latest show in progress. Be sure to join us also at www.freedomizerradio.com on your computer or tablet, where you can interact with our listeners in the chat room as well as comment on the show. We also have a large variety of shows throughout the broadcast day at www.freedomizerradio.com, each with its own unique host covering a wide range of topics to keep you informed on issues that the mainstream media refuses to touch. Once again, that's www.freedomizerradio.com, or you can listen by phone by calling 347-324-3704. Be sure to tune in.
Well, we're back, and Debbie, I think you're back in as host, and I'm going to turn it over to you. Looking forward to hearing what you have to say today.
Thank you. I feel like I should start off, and I hope my voice is loud and clear, you know, with some kind of a stress reduction. I'm just having just a blast on the show today, even though we've had lots of glitches and things that might cause somebody to be anxious or stressed. For instance, if you're not called in as a host, you can't screen any of the callers. And, you know, you can't do the things that you would normally be able to do. And it was just let it ride. Everything's good. Somehow it worked itself out. And I want to thank Tiger Lily and Cheryl and Blog Talk Radio for taking care of all this, because it really, really works and you don't have to worry about it. And because I was talking about chocolate, I thought I would just say a little something. There's tons of research on chocolate and their components and how good it is for you, even though we think of it as fattening, and that's because if you're eating something that is really in the high sugar, that is not going to be the best thing for you. So look for the ones that have a very high percentage of actual natural organic cocoa. Cutting down on stimulants is essential to helping you feel relaxed. So that people who walk around drinking a cup of caffeinated coffee all day may not be the best thing for you, even though coffee is showing so many benefits. And I have an article, special article about coffee and tea also that's good for you. Keep a diary for 3 days just to see what stimulants you're taking and see how it affects you. Try to identify a point in the day where you usually need to take it and see if it's actually giving you a pick-me-up or if you're going to have a big drop in energy shortly after eating it. Replace your behaviors with ones that you find are going to be better for you. For me, like, I just had a super, super green. I mean, this is new. There's no way in the world green eggs and ham I'm going to be eating something that is that dark green, but I love it. And you just take your juicer and put some kale, lemon, ginger, actually the fresh root of the turmeric. They're a little spicy flavor to it, so start off slow. Make sure you put that apple in there for sweetener, celery, parsley, anything. And my trick on making juices is to keep in the monochromatic, well, color tone. So if I would put in, I almost put in some of that carrot in with the kale and the greens, and I decided to save it for an all-orange drink. So it's so beautiful to just have that pure green, because if I put that carrot in, that juice would turn brown. And I think it's less appetizing that way for some reason. Well, So we're going to just have to think about more ways that chocolate can enhance our health. Now, one other thing for stress reduction is to become mindful in the moment. Where are your emotions? What is the position of your body? And think about that. So put your feet flat on the floor, and if you're wearing shoes, you might even want to take them off for a second and just feel the ground beneath you. I'm doing this in a seated position at my desk in front of the computers. The first thing that I always think about is my shoulders. Right there and then, drop your shoulders. Release any tension that you might be feeling, that you might have your shoulders lifted up toward your ears. And that means you're carrying something. You're a little bit stressed out. Just relax it, and you can drop them even more than you're doing right now. Do you notice when you do that, you just feel like taking a deep breath in? You just feel it just, it's automated. Your relaxation response is an automated, natural, innate capability that you have to bring the breath in, the oxygen in. And to me, at this point, my eyes are already closed because, again, you can train yourself by doing it over and over again for a certain number of days. And if you're doing Qigong, you think about in a 100-day process. For 100 days, you do something, it becomes natural, it becomes habitual, it becomes something that you can snap into almost like you have some kind of a self-hypnosis. And so now you're kind of probably belly breathing if you're relaxed. And at this point, I could probably put on some soothing music and slow my talking and the rhythm of my breathing. And along with that, slowing the rhythm of your heart relaxes and you let go of any harsh, toxic thoughts, negative things that are in your life, and just let that go and be at peace for just a few moments. Whatever was worrying you, concerning you, stressing you out, just let it go out the fingertips. Let it go through the body into the ground and let the ground filter it. Okay, I want to waken everybody up if you're in sleep mode right now. It's easy to do because we're all sleep deprived. You might even want to rub your hands together. I'm putting you through the paces here of a really quick stress reduction session, and I'm rubbing my hands together, creating that friction, that warmth, that heat, and you can put that up to your face now. Just send that energy into your face. You can even bring it to your cheeks and gently massage, and even down your jaw to your throat area, your neck area, around to the back of your neck. Gently do a little self-massage. And if you feel any tightness in your muscles, coming down your neck to your shoulders, just pull them and feel that release. Oh, now I'm opening my eyes to the light, and I want to tell you this is really great to do this. Probably just took you a couple minutes, and it's like you're refreshed. I would like to let folks know that on September 30th, Linnea Hahn is going to be my guest on the Health In Show. That's Monday at 11 a.m. It's on nissancommunications.com. If you wish to learn more, just go to Homeopathy World Community. It's in the Health In section. She's going to be talking about full spectrum lights. She is the expert for 20 some odd years. She's done lots of research about it and what you can do to improve your mood, alleviate depression, help you with other kinds of physical problems that you might have, even as far as dental caries. Dental cavities have been improved with the use of full-spectrum lights. People who have kids that are off the wall with ADHD and autism, she has done research to show that this really helps people, in students, in anyone who's in a work environment under fluorescent lights to actually concentrate and not get headaches, because these are flicker-free lights. There's even a coupon if you're interested. If you put the word health in when you go to the indoor sunshine page, you will be able to get a 10% discount. So just go ahead and check it out on Homeopathy World Community. The website to go to for the lights is called sunshinesciences.com. The other thing, other news, this coming Monday is going to be Kate Birch. She is my supervisor and the person that I learned about homeoprophylaxis, and she's going to be talking about herd immunity. This is an important topic that Alan and I have spoken about numerous times, understanding exactly what is herd immunity. A website called vaccines.gov says that vaccines are your best shot at good health. That's a pun. Let's take a closer look about that belief, that theory, and about the facts. Kate is going to be our guide. Vaccines, they say, prevent outbreaks of disease and saves lives. When a critical portion of the community is immunized against a contagious disease, most members of the community are protected against that disease because there is little opportunity for an outbreak. Even those who are not eligible for certain vaccines, such as infants, pregnant women, or immunocompromised individuals, get some protection because the spread of contagious disease is contained. This is known as community immunity. Now, that is on the vaccine.gov website. What they are not telling you is, does that theory work when we're talking about artificial disease, about vaccine protection, as opposed to the actual, getting the actual disease itself and building a lifetime immunity, or homeoprophylactically getting the energetic vibration and resonance of that disease and educating your immune system through a process called homeoprophylaxis, which has been undergoing decades of research, if not used for 200 plus years through Samuel Hahnemann, the founder of homeopathy. He also used this type of protection and building up of your immune system. So Dr. Isaac Golden he's in Australia, I believe, he has been doing many decades of work in this area, and Kate Birch studied with him, and this is now being spread to many other homeopathic physicians, doctors, practitioners, and also in the medical field. This is the research and data collection is going through the National Institute of Health. This is viable, good science. The principle of community immunity applies to control of a variety of contagious disease, including influenza, measles, mumps, rotavirus, and pneumococcal vax disease. So we're going to look a little bit about this, and I encourage you to go to Homeopathy World Community and find out more about the show, which is Monday at 11 a.m. Those are the two shows that I wanted to let you know about, and there will be a whole lineup of more things coming up throughout the year. Folks who have ideas for me, I love to hear from you. And if you have questions, it's homeopathyworldcommunity@gmail.com. Okay, and again, you can also visit me at Facebook, Homeopathy World Community, where you're going to see lots of notes. For instance, I'll give you a couple of good notes here. One is remedy of the day, Actea spicata, which is for rheumatism, a remedy for the small joints that have tearing, tingling pains, rheumatism in your wrist. So you might be thinking of carpal tunnel syndrome as well for things like this. Pain, spasms, Even for the heart spasms, the person might be very fearful and starts easily, feels confused, and doesn't do well drinking coffee. So very much like a few other remedies, I ask you to compare them to Simisifuga, Colophyllum, and Letum. Really big, big remedies in the homeopathic world. So it's a good way to get started. The other thing I have on Homeopathy World Community today is a link to that Gary Knoll video called Vaccines, the Toxic Truth. I am pleading with everybody, please listen to him. He is a very passionate speaker, very knowledgeable, educated, experienced in the medical world. And this stuff, not enough people are hearing it, so send a message out to your friends. A message that I received, a couple of messages. One is about the vaccine damage that can be caused by, okay, this is about the 22 times the rate of ear infections that are happening with children who have vaccines. This can be found on Mercola.com, what you must know about the latest vaccine safety review by the Institute of Medicine, IOM. It's part of the National Academy of Sciences. And there you will find that kids who are, they're taking a look at 8 vaccines, Hep A, Hep B, measles, mumps, rubella, that's the MMR, meningococcal vaccine, pneumococcal, diphtheria, tetanus, and acellular pertussin, that's the DTaP or the DTDAP, the varicella chickenpox, HPV vaccine, and influenza. Serious health problems include MS, multiple sclerosis, lupus, another autoimmune disease, encephalitis, brain inflammation, rheumatoid arthritis, which the remedies that I just mentioned earlier might come in handy if you do have symptoms, but always see your healthcare provider or your legal aide. Autism and encephalopathy involving permanent brain damage. Those are pretty mighty adverse effects if you are the person who does not do well with a vaccine. So what are the other health conditions that will be obviously not a double-blind controlled trial, Mercola says, but the outcome for these vaccinations, impositions, assaults on the body with so many, up to, what is it, 72 injections to little children by the age of 12, the outcome could be allergies, asthma, hay fever, neurodermatitis, which is an autoimmune disorder, ADHD, middle ear infection, sinusitis, autism, and they tell you what the prevalence of that is going to be, and the fact that compared to unvaccinated children who have a much lesser potential of having that risk. Very, very much few. Only, for instance, autism, 1 in 100 for the vaccinated group, and only 4 cases out of 7,800 plus served in this particular survey. So again, I know we're talking to the bandwagon here. All of you folks who are already listening know this information, so go out and talk to your friends. Let them know what's going on. Okay. We have a few more minutes left to today's show, and we talked a little bit about stress reduction, and I wanted to mention about MRSA a little bit more because, oh, first I wanted to give you that tip. Drinking coffee and tea slashes nasal MRSA infection risk. So we are still in the ballpark of resistant bugs, superbugs, resistant strains of bacteria, with the CDC's recent warning that deadly antibiotic resistance, what's called the nightmare bacteria, are taking the lives of at least 23,000 U.S. patients a year. The discovery that regular consumption of coffee and tea, I would assume that's black tea, orange pekoe tea, caffeinated coffee, slashes the risk of nasal colonization of MRSA in half. It is very remarkable. So if you have to take a risk, folks, or if you want to improve your risk, then a little coffee or a little tea might be what you would like to select. It says approximately 2.5 million persons, that's 1.4% of the population, carry the MRSA in their nasal cavities. You know, even if you carry something, we are carrying so many billions of microorganisms within our body, and they have a good function if they're in their proper balance. Individuals who reported consuming hot tea, it's not that sweetened iced tea, folks. Sorry, all you folks in the South here who love your sweet teas. You're talking about the Northerners who love hot tea, where one half is likely to have MRSA nasal carriage relative to the individuals who drank no tea. Individuals who reported consuming coffee had about one half the reduction of the risk of MRSA nasal carriage relative to individuals who drank no coffee. And you can find this information on www.greenmedinfo.com. Alan and I are both authors on that website if we have enough time to write some more stuff, but this is from the founder of Green Med Info, Sayurji, and he is an awesome person to learn from. He has courses and everything else. The other thing that I wanted to let you know about Staphylococcus, it is methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. That is the full name for the abbreviation MRSA. And what is happening is with the overuse of antibiotics and the overuse of the antibacterial soaps, that is what pushes these strains to find the weak link and mutate much faster than people propagate or reproduce. These bacteria will constantly mutate and create new strains which will be resistant. The best thing that you can do is wash with nice regular soapy hot water before you eat, before you touch things. Kids who are in the athlete, sports-minded kids in schools and in locker rooms, wherever you go to the gym, this is another place where the MRSA strains will spread. So definitely be careful there wherever you go and keep yourself washed properly and not using too much antibiotics or that kind of antibacterial soap. And they've actually shown that that will help you more than anything else. I have an article complete all about staph bacterial infections on HubPages, debbiebruck.hubpages.com. You will see an article all about it. We also have the use of homeopathic remedies, and I think my time is up, so I'm going to have to sign out and let the next host come in. See you next time, next Thursday at 1 p.m. Bye-bye, folks.
I am an autonomous government agent here to steal your livelihood.
Not so fast. I'm Sovereign Filing Solutions.
And I'm the Sovereign.
I am an autonomous government agent here to steal your livelihood.
Not so fast. I'm Sovereign Filing Solutions.
And I'm the Sovereign. We're teamed up
to bring you
the truth without censorship.
Are you tired of being fed multi-million-dollar media lies?
Are you ready for the real story?
Sovereign Filing Solutions has teamed up with the Sovereign newspaper to make sure you get it.
And not the BS this guy behind me wants to feed you.
Take the step, help make the change.
Oh, come on, that's not even fair. How are we supposed to rule indiscriminately if you know what's going on?
Across this land, both near and far, throughout the human race, with each beating heart, there is a dream whose time has come for us to claim our birthright, each and every one.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.